Give me the lay of the land here. What are the Army and Marine Corps using now for ground transportation?
Well, in terms of the programs that they're bringing online, they're looking to replace the Bradley Infantry Fighting Vehicle, this is the Army, with the new Ground Combat Vehicle. And they've also got a rather old set of family of vehicles, the M113s, and they are looking to replace those with the new armored multi-purpose vehicle. Now, the Marines have the amphibious assault vehicle. They're looking to replace that and also the light armored vehicles that they use on land, and they're looking to replace those with Marine personnel carriers.
All right, you have a report called The Road Ahead, Future Challenges and Their Implications for Ground Vehicle Modernization, and we have it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Now, you outline two big challenges as planners try to conceptualize what these vehicles should look like, uncertainty and austerity. Talk to me first about uncertainty, what you mean there.
Well, the problem is, as former Secretary of Defense Gates pointed out, where we have a pretty poor track record of knowing where we're going to fight next against what kind of enemy. And so in an uncertain environment, it's difficult to state with a high degree of precision, this is exactly the kind of ground vehicle family we're going to need, you know, these types of vehicles. So that's really the problem there. And the issue is, how can you try and reduce that uncertainty some? You can't eliminate it because you can never predict the future. And we talk about seven trends that we think are going to influence the future of land warfare.
The second element of this is austerity, and that obviously is the budget situation that the Pentagon is in. How does that apply in particular to this area of ground vehicles?
Oh, there's a lot of frustration because the Army had to cancel, or actually Secretary Gates canceled, the whole family of future combat systems. And the Marine Corps recently, the Secretary of Defense, canceled the Expeditionary Fighting Vehicle. And both services put tens of billions of dollars into these programs, and there's a realization that you know, we may be able to buy our way out of that particular mistake, but if we make another one, it's going to be very difficult to come back and say we want more money, given that we bought these set of vehicles, and quite frankly, they're not what we hoped they would be.
As I review this report, as I read what you and your colleagues are writing, Eric Lindsay is your co-author of this
right.
report, as I read what you're writing, is it fair for me to paraphrase the general idea of this as you folks saying the Pentagon should just be a lot less ambitious than they might ordinarily be about something like this?
Absolutely. If you look at the history of the last decade, both the Army and the Marine Corps were trying to make a big leap forward in terms of ground vehicles. And it turned out to be, in a sense, a bridge too far, too technically ambitious, too costly, too time-consuming to get new systems online. And Secretary Gates, when he canceled these programs, said, look, you're looking for exquisite solutions. You're looking for performance at any cost. And quite frankly, we're not getting anything out of this, really. We're getting program delays. We're getting cost overruns. We have to settle or look for an 80% solution that we can have as opposed to a 100% solution that we really can't get to.
You anticipated my next question, whether that concept fits with the idea of the 80% solution, because that's an idea, that's a concept that is, I'm starting to hear a lot more in the past 6 months than I've heard in maybe the previous 6 years when it comes to procurement at the Pentagon.
Well, you have really four things you have to consider. One is performance, and you know, we'd all like the best performance in the world, but there are other factors you have to consider. The second one is cost. It can't be performance at any cost, not in the austere environment where the Pentagon is looking at cutting $500 billion over the next 10 years. The third is timeliness. How soon can I get these new systems? Because I can't wait forever. I've got equipment now that's wearing out. And the fourth is relevance. You know, how relevant is this equipment going to be for the kinds of conflicts that I'm going to be fighting?
And I wonder if a subhead under the relevance one might be flexibility, in that, as you mentioned earlier, it's very difficult to anticipate what you might be using this thing for 10, 15, 20 years from now.
Absolutely, Francis. What we said is look, you know, it's worth paying some insurance money in terms of building in surplus weight, surplus space, surplus power into these systems, because that gives you a better chance chance of adapting them once, you know, the true character of the next contingency, the next fight, becomes clear.
You also talk about something in this report, sir, that I found interesting, and that is the idea of trying to find as close to possible, as close as possible, off-the-shelf solutions that can maybe be modified to suit the purposes of the Pentagon. It's another idea that until recently would probably never be thought of in a conversation like this.
Well, that's true, but you know, scarcity of money and necessity is the mother of invention. But when you think about it, in a sense, both the future combat systems and the expeditionary fighting vehicle for the Marines, they reflected sort of a big leap forward approach to procurement. But what we've actually seen over the last 10 years is, you know, both services have generally tended to buy off-the-shelf equipment like MRAPs, like the Strikers for the Army, for example. The Army, you know, the Marines have had to extend the amphibious assault vehicles, the light armored vehicles, longer than they had hoped to. So what we've actually seen the services do is they kind of aspire to one thing, which is the next big leap to the next generation of systems. But because of the problems of you know, trying to push the technology too far and cost overruns and what they've defaulted to is really not modernization, but recapitalization, extending existing production lines, or buying off the shelf, as you said, Francis.
We seem to also be coming out of this circular back and forth where civilian folks seem to say for a long time, well, the uniform folks didn't want us to just buy something off the shelf, and the uniform folks seem to say, well, custom building all the time is driving us crazy, but we don't know how else to get the stuff, and now we're seeing a different solution to that. Is that fair to say?
I think generally, yes, it really is a struggle right now. You know, you have to have a lot of sympathy for the leadership of the Army and the Marine Corps because, in a sense, they've got whole families of vehicles that are aging. Some have been in service, you know, 30, 40 years. They're wearing out. They need new equipment, but they have to be very careful because the funding just isn't there for the kinds of optimum vehicles they'd like to buy. And, of course, again, if you make major mistakes now in terms of the modernization programs you choose, there may be no money or very little money to sort of buy your way out of those mistakes down the road.